This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Austria's capital is rocked by a terror attack. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Rossio.
The city center in Vienna, Austria, was the scene of an attack Monday night that left at least two people dead and 15 wounded, according to authorities. One of those killed was an attacker. The attack shortly after 8 p.m. came as Viennese were out before a coronavirus lockdown was to take effect. Rabbi Shlomo Hofmeister witnessed the horror.
People were sitting outside and he was shooting at the people.
Police said there were several gunmen and shootings took place at six different locations. I'm Mike Gracia.
U.S. Republican President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden continued their attacks on one another and explained to crowds why each one is more suited than the other to lead the country. At a campaign rally in Kenosha, Wisconsin, President Trump says Democrats want to teach children hate in America.
So I just signed an executive order to teach our students pro-American values, right? Pro-American values.
At a drive-in rally in Pittsburgh, Joe Biden says that if he is elected, he will take the steps to slow the spread of COVID-19.
On day one, we're going to act to get COVID under control. On day one of my presidency, I'll put in action a plan that I've been talking about for months. Masking, social distancing, testing, tracing. A plan for full and fair and free distribution of therapeutics and vaccines.
Tens of millions of Americans have already voted early, but Tuesday is officially Election Day, where reporting of the vote tallying process becomes the height of both the campaigns. And again, both candidates were fanned out across several areas on Monday for the final campaign pushes. This is VOA News. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Monday that a recent spike in COVID-19 cases in some countries in Europe and North America presented leaders with a critical moment for action. Top WHO emergencies expert Mike Ryan said governments in Europe face a very, very difficult situation in controlling rising numbers of COVID-19 cases as their citizens grow wary with renewed restrictions on daily life. The WHO technical lead for COVID-19 said that the latest spike in infections was stretching health services, and the Director General Tedros said on Sunday that he had been identified as a contact of someone who tested positive for COVID-19, but added that he was feeling well and did not have any symptoms. President Donald Trump's suggestion that he may fire Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top infectious disease expert, after Tuesday's election is not going over well with many health experts. AP correspondent Ben Thomas explains why.
President Trump responded to this "Fire Fauci" chant at a campaign rally in Florida Sunday night.
But let me wait till a little bit after the election.
Over the weekend, Fauci told the Washington Post the U.S. could not possibly be positioned more poorly to stem the spread of the coronavirus as the colder months arrive and people gather indoors more. That assessment resonates with many health experts, including Dr. Matt Hines at the Tucson Medical Center, who says the notion of firing Fauci
perfectly encapsulates everything that's really just been wrong with this administration's approach.
Dr. John Swartzberg at UC Berkeley's School of Public Health adds,
"For us to control this pandemic, we need a trusted voice out of the federal government."
Ben Thomas, Washington.
Islamic State claimed responsibility for an attack on Kabul University Monday that killed at least 22 people. Then the group's Amic News agency reported in a message posted on Telegram, the group claimed to have killed and injured 80 Afghan judges, investigators, and security personnel who gathered on completion of a training program. The death toll released by Afghan officials is much lower at 22 and does not mention the killing of judges or prosecutors. Officials said multiple students had been killed. Nicaragua on Monday scrambled to evacuate citizens from their Atlantic coast as Hurricane Eta barreled closer, and the U.S. National Hurricane Center warned of flash floods and catastrophic winds in Central America. Storm is a devastating Category 4 hurricane on the five-step scale, was expected to slam the northeast coast of Nicaragua late Monday or early Tuesday. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil of VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America, James Batte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tanzania opposition leader Tundu Lissu was released late Monday from police custody.
After I was picked up, they took me to the central police station, and I was questioned for about 15, 20 minutes. And the charge that they told me was organizing or inciting a coup d'etat against the government.
Tanzania's opposition says it will not be deterred from its demand for fresh elections. Uganda has begun presidential candidate nominations for the 2021 presidential election. A Kenyan lawyer wanted by the ICC for witness tampering surrenders to Dutch authorities. And a man has set himself on fire in Liberia to protest non-payment of salary arrears by the government.
As it stands right now, our government is not indebted to any employee for salaries. As a matter of fact, we have paid over the last 7 months over 60 to 70% of government employees.
And today is the final day of voting here in the United States. We'll examine this morning U.S. foreign policy towards Africa in the next administration. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tanzania, main opposition presidential candidate Tundu Lissu was released from police custody late Monday. The authorities also arrested several opposition leaders in an apparent preemptive move to prevent a planned Monday demonstration against the just-concluded presidential election, which the opposition said was fraudulent. Lissu said the police interrogated and charged him with planning to stage a coup d'etat.
Since yesterday, I was told President Magufuli had issued an order for his security people to get me. The actual words used was to deal with me once and for all. So I went into a safe house yesterday, stayed with some friends, and then I had to leave because I didn't want to put my friends in danger of reprisals. Then I started looking for another place to stay. The noose was tightening around my neck, as it were, figuratively. Then I decided to go to the German embassy. Someone told me to go to see the German ambassador. And I went to the building.
Did the government bring any charges against you? Because one account we have is that you have been charged with terrorism.
No, it's not me who has been charged with terrorism, but my party chairman and three other officials who were picked up last night. At least we have heard that they are being charged with terrorism. I have not been charged with any offense. After I was picked up late this evening, they took me to the central police station, and I was questioned for about 15, 20 minutes. And the charge that they told me was organizing or inciting a coup d'etat against the government. And I told them that is rubbish. We had called for nationwide protests. Nationwide protests are a democratic means of expressing our opposition to what happened last week. And so the charge that they told me about was one of trying to overthrow the government. And they questioned me for 15 minutes. They did not record any of my answers, you know, and they just let me go.
The opposition was supposed to have a demonstration because of the election. Did you have the demonstration?
We didn't, because the police presence in the city of Dar es Salaam was massive starting last night. And there was simply no way people were going to congregate with that kind of heavy police presence. And the fact that our national leadership was arrested, our leaders across the country, regional and district levels, were also picked up last night, and they continue to be arrested.
What has become of them? Have they also been released?
Some have been released, but others are still being held, particularly ACT leaders in Zanzibar. Many of them continue to be in detention. But only in Zanzibar, Maalim Seif, the presidential candidate, has been released. But others continue to be held in police jails across the island.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lissu. It's always nice to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Batte.
Tundu Lissu is the presidential candidate of Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. Opposition groups in Tanzania are calling on the international community to condemn what they say appears to be the government's despotic behavior following the conclusion of the recent general election. In a joint statement, main opposition parties Chadema and ACT Wazalendo called on the country's regional and international partners to pressure the administration to stop harassing and arresting their leaders and supporters. Their remarks come after police arrested some opposition leaders, including Frema Umbo, the national chairperson of the largest opposition party, Chadema. John Unriman is Chadema's director of communication, foreign affairs, and protocols. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the opposition will not be deterred in their demands for fresh elections.
Yeah, it is true that Chairman Mboye was arrested yesterday night together with three members of the Central Committee. And the Dar es Salaam Police Commissioner said that they will charge him on a terrorism, something which is very weird, because in our country, if you are charged with terrorism, it means that you have no bail. And so they want to give him that capital accusement so that he will be in jail for a few years to come. And our reaction is that the police, they should understand that we are a peaceful party. We need this country to move forward. We don't need them to harass our leaders. They have stolen the election. They have rigged the election. They should give us the space to breathe rather than starting now trying to give us cases which are unbailable.
Well, some people are suggesting that they were arrested because of the planned protest against the election result. They fear that your supporters could clash with the police. So to prevent that and to ensure there is peace and stability in Tanzania, that's where they were arrested, because they were fomenting trouble. How do you respond to that?
If you arrested three people, then you are saying that the public will stop reacting. It is not the truth. Reaction from the public, it is from the public, and not from the leaders. Mboye was not a presidential candidate. Mboye was just a parliamentary candidate, and he was arrested in Dar es Salaam. If he wanted to cause chaos, he should stay in his constituency in Kilimanjaro. But he was in Dar es Salaam because he has to lead us on several central committee meetings so that we can even nominate members who will be the special seats members of parliament. He's the chairman of those kinds of meetings. So right now they have barred us from nominating members of special seats as well as the members of the council special seats.
It appears that the protest that you called for is not happening. However, I understand both ACT Wazalendo and your party, Chadema, are calling on international partners, regional and continental leaders or groupings to condemn what you are describing as tyrannical behavior by the government against opposition and civil society groups. Is this accurate?
Yes. Our presidential candidate issued a statement that they should public should react on protests. He didn't say that the protest will start today. So it's an ongoing movement. And we are calling the regional leaders, African Union, the world as well, to see, because we don't want our country to go in trouble. But if they'll keep quiet, whatever will happen from the public, they should not blame Chadema, because Chadema, we are a peaceful party. We are organized, but we don't want to bring chaos to this country.
John Unriman is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for the opposition Chadema of Tanzania. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. Uganda on Monday began a two-day nomination process for candidates who will compete in February's presidential elections. President Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled the country for 34 years, was the first to be nominated and warned that opponents who destabilize the country would be dealt with. Opposition candidates, including musician-turned-politician Bobby Wine, say their homes and offices are under surveillance. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
At 10:30 a.m., Mandy, flanked by his wife and 10 supporters allowed at the presidential nomination venue, President Yoweri Museveni arrived with his full presidential motorcade and escorts. streets and roads leading to the nomination grounds, songs of praise from 70 blared through speakers and were danced to by his supporters wearing yellow T-shirts. After going through his documents for verification and reading him the electoral rules, Electoral Commission Chairman Simon Byabakama declared Museveni a candidate for the February elections.
I, Justice Byabakama Mugenyi Simon, being the returning officer for the nomination of presidential candidates, hereby declare that Yoweri Museveni Tibuhaburwa Kaguta, a duly nominated candidate in respect of the presidential elections 2021.
All day, Ugandan social media, radio and television have been awash with songs and messages shouting out Museveni's campaign slogan, Secure Your Future. In this song, President Yoweri Museveni is praised for his management of affairs, including the handling of the opposition, saying he's not as bad as late presidents Idi Amin Dada and Milton Obote. But after his nomination Monday, President Museveni took a tough tone, accusing opponents of receiving support from abroad and suggesting the ruling NRM party will use force to keep order if he deems it necessary. He says, I hear there are people who want to disorganize and act foolishly. He says, I want to assure you that no one will bring disorganization here, and whoever does so will regret it. Because we don't joke, NRM fought to bring peace in this country. I am not holding a gun now, but no one has stronger military power than us. But we don't scare people, says Museveni. Museveni is expected to face 9 challengers for the presidency. By the end of Monday, 5 candidates will have been nominated. Some presidential aspirants, including Lieutenant General Henry Tumkunde and Robert Chagurani, better known as Bobby Wine, say their homes and offices are under surveillance. This is Wine speaking outside his house in Kampala.
You've all noticed they've blocked roads coming to our offices and leaving. They've also deployed unnecessarily everywhere, and I want to believe that is to intimidate Ugandans. And tomorrow I will leave my house with my wife and a few friends heading to the nomination center. I'm not going to hide from nobody. I'm not a criminal. I'm a free Ugandan.
There is likely to be a heavy presence of police on the streets tomorrow when the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change and Wine's NUP party nominate their presidential candidates. Since last week, police have warned opposition parties not to hold any kind of procession on the way to the nomination center. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 3rd. A spokesperson for the International Criminal Court, the ICC, says the court has asked Dutch authorities to transfer Kenyan lawyer Paul Gicheru, who turned himself in yesterday, Monday, to Dutch authorities. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Gicheru and 2 others for an alleged attempt to influence witnesses of the court. Following the 2007-2008 Kenyan post-election violence, the ICC charged Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto, journalist Joshua Sang, and Henry Kosge with crimes against humanity. The charges were later dropped because of witness tampering. ICC spokesperson Fadi El Abdallah says the ICC will begin pre-trial proceedings once Gicheru is transferred to the court.
So what happened is that Mr. Gicheru surrendered himself to the authorities of the Netherlands pursuant to an arrest warrant that was issued by the ICC back in 2015 for offenses against the administration of justice consisting in allegedly corruptly influencing witnesses of the ICC. Now, there is a national proceedings in the Netherlands. The court has asked the Netherlands to arrest and transfer Mr. Gicheru to the ICC custody. Once that happens, then the proceeding before the ICC can go ahead. At the pre-trial level, we have first what we call an initial appearance hearing. So once a new suspect enters in the ICC custody, there's a first hearing to be sure that he understands the charges brought against him, identify the person and tell him about the charges, about the rights of the defense, and start planning for what we call a confirmation of charges hearing, which is a kind of a filter by which the pretrial chamber will decide which cases can go ahead to the trial because there are enough evidence that warrants a trial, or that if the judges decide otherwise, it can be stopped at the pretrial level.
So, Fadik, what happens now? We know that the case against William Ruto and Uhuru Kenyatta, the ICC dropped that case. Now, with Paul Gicheru turning himself in, is it likely that the ICC could reopen the case against William Ruto?
Well, first, these are separate cases. So independently of the two first cases that were brought against Mr. Ruto, Mr. Kenyatta, and Mr. Sang, this case is about offenses against the administration of justice. It's a separate case that follows its own path independently of what was the outcome of the two other cases. For the two other cases, they have been closed, but it is for the ICC prosecutor to reopen them if she considers that she has evidence that would warrant that and then restart this procedure. But as I said, I need to emphasize this case is about alleged offenses against the administration of justice, and it's different from the other cases which were about crimes against humanity.
Why do you think the ICC is interested in this particular case? Is there a particular lesson here?
Well, it is part of the rules that have been established in order to protect the integrity of the proceedings before the court. This possibility of prosecuting individuals who might commit offenses against the administration of justice, for example, by bribing witnesses or by forging evidence and so on. The point of this rule, which we call the Article 70 of the Rome Statute, is precisely to offer this protection to the proceedings against this type of attempts to tamper with it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome, James.
Fadi El Abdallah is spokesperson for the International Criminal Court. He was speaking with us from The Hague. A government worker in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, set himself ablaze Monday before the country's Supreme Court. Archie Pompon, an employee of the judicial branch, set himself on fire at the seat of the judiciary in protest over the non-payment of 12 months of salary arrears allegedly owed him and his fellow workers by the government. Moses Gazia will report from Monrovia.
Archie Pompon, a controversial activist and government worker, shocked the country when he gassed himself before lighting up his entire body before the Supreme Court. Pompon and his colleagues have been protesting for days to demand payment of 12 months' arrears that they claim are owed them by the Liberian government. After setting himself ablaze, some of his colleagues and sympathizers helped extinguish the flames despite sustaining serious burns across his body. Some of Pompon's protesting colleagues explain to VOA exactly why their friend set himself ablaze.
The four bench of the Supreme Court and the central administration, the option is theirs. What happening now? We have been tailed by hard men. We have been tailed by hard men. As I was just telling the press over there, you see my Secretary General, last night, all new men were parading the corridor of our vicinity. Archie has complained the Chief Justice of button assassination, alleged assassination. That report is now with the police.
The Liberian judiciary expressed shock over the incident but said the issue of salary was outside its purview but the responsibility of the Ministry of Finance and Development Planning. Daryl Ambrose Ma is the Director of Public Information at the judiciary.
The government said that the wage bill was too high in the government sector, so they were going to cut people's pay. And they cut people's pay. That is the central government of the Republic of Liberia. It is not the judiciary. It is just one branch that was affected. Well, it is the government's decision. It's the Ministry of Finance. So it is not the judiciary. So the judiciary owes no staff any pay.
Meanwhile, the Liberian government says it is saddened by the situation to see a Liberian set himself on fire and deny owing salary arrears to government workers. Deputy Information Minister Eugene Fagon disclosed that the government has for the past 7 months been current with payment of wages.
As it stands right now, our government is not indebted to any employee for salaries. As a matter of fact, we have paid over the last 7 months over 60 to 70% of government employees stayed at home and got paid their salaries in full, not subtracted, not reduced when those employees were at home.
About 2 months ago, Finance and Development Planning Minister Samuel Twe acknowledged mistakes affecting judicial workers' salaries after the government harmonization scheme in 2019. He promised the government will make good on paying their arrears. Deputy Information Minister Fagon says it takes time and process for the government government to execute the promise.
Here and there in some agencies, but those problems were not above solution, and that somehow solutions were going to be found to those problems. It's a process.
Achip Pompon is one of the most controversial activists in Liberia. He was almost mobbed by citizens years ago when he openly supported gays in Liberia. Recently, he also staged a hunger strike before the United States Embassy in Liberia over wages, the same reasons he set himself ablaze on Monday. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
A former U.S. diplomat says whether President Donald Trump is re-elected or Vice President Joe Biden wins the 2020 U.S. election, U.S. policy towards Africa will remain the same. Herman J. Cohen serves as U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under President George H.W. Bush. He is the author of a 2020 book entitled U.S. Policy Towards Africa. Ambassador Cohen says even though President Trump tried to dismantle some of former President Barack Obama's domestic and some foreign policies, he has maintained most policies on Africa.
If you look at President Trump's first 4 years, he has not changed U.S. policy. He has maintained everything that President Obama did, the Power Africa program, the Feed the Future program. He has also maintained the programs of President Clinton, which was African Growth and Opportunity Act, and President George W. Bush, the PEPFAR against HIV/AIDS. So I would say that President Trump's policy toward Africa's continuity. This is a bit surprising to me because in other things, in domestic policy, he didn't like what President Obama did, both domestic and foreign. For example, he took us out of the Iran nuclear deal that President Obama negotiated. He took us out of the Paris Climate Accords that President Obama negotiated. But when it comes to Africa, he's kept everything in place, and he's even added some new things. He's added a program called Prosper Africa, which is designed to attract U.S. investors. So I think U.S. policy generally over the years has been bipartisan. And President Trump has continued that tradition.
Yet some analysts say that President Trump has had a benign disinterest when it comes to trade and development assistance in Africa. What do you make of that analysis?
Well, I disagree with that because U.S. assistance to Africa has been at a high level. The budget has been quite high, and we've been looking much as possible to promote U.S. investors. So what you might say is that maybe President Trump has not taken a personal interest in Africa. He's not done personally much. But the rest of the U.S. government has been very active, whether it's State Department, Treasury Department, USAID. So I wouldn't say a benign disinterest. President Trump has received African heads of state. He had the president of Nigeria coming in. He had the president of Kenya. So in general, I would say that the policy under Trump has been the same as under previous presidents.
So what kind of U.S. policy should we expect, say, if former Vice President Joe Biden wins?
Well, you must remember that Biden was vice president for 8 years under President Obama. So he will certainly want to follow the same policies that they had with Obama, which is being very aggressive on agriculture, trying to build up African agriculture on the Feed the Future program, and also to promote more electricity in Africa under the Power Africa program. Both of these were started by President Obama. And I think President Obama was unusual in the sense he spoke truth to power. He talked to African leaders about ending corruption and using state revenue for the people. So I would expect if Biden gets elected that he would be the same.
Herman J. Cohen is the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under President George H.W. Bush. You're speaking with us from Washington, D.C. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you will have a good day.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them. and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with our voices on VOA.